Good evening. It is good to see all who are able to be back out this evening and have seen fit to come back and to join us as we study from the Word of God. We began studying this morning from the book of Daniel in the third chapter in the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we took some time reading it this morning. We'll just kind of run back through it quickly this evening. But we noted that in the story, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were among the elite of the young men in Babylon. They were those that had been taken in the capture, that had been taken captive when the Israelites were led away into Babylonian captivity, the southern kingdom of Judah. And they were there along with Daniel in the court of King Nebuchadnezzar, and they were given positions of some power. And with that came some responsibilities, then, and it also created some difficulties in that some of the others didn't like the preferred positions that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had. And we saw in Daniel chapter 3 that King Nebuchadnezzar built an image of gold, and in that image of gold is about 90 feet high and about 9 feet wide. And he made a commandment that when the lyre, the psaltery, and the bagpipe and the trigon and all these things, when these instruments go off, that everyone was to bow down before that golden idol. And when this happened, we can see, as we read in Daniel chapter 3 this morning, that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and it appears that perhaps other Jews likewise did not bow down, but because they were in positions of power, the other satraps and governors and treasurers and such came to King Nebuchadnezzar, and we saw in verse 12 where they said, "There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up." And so as we looked at these things, we saw that with this command that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, they had the ability, the strength of faith, to remain steadfast and to serve the Lord, even when everyone else about them was bowing down. And we noted that we need to have the same courage that they had. When you look at the peer pressure that they faced, that we need to be able to face the peer pressure around us, with whether it be our co-workers or our family or our friends, whatever. We need to be willing to remain strong, to remain steadfast, that we keep our faith to the Lord. As we noted in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, there in verse 13, where the Apostle Paul said, "Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, and be strong." And so we need to keep ourselves faithful to the Lord. And as they were brought before King Nebuchadnezzar, we noted in the lesson this morning, after he was told of these things, he was very angry with them, and he brought them before him, and he said, "All right, is this true?" And they were like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Well, I'm going to give you one more chance. I'm going to have the instruments of music blown, and if you'll bow down before this idol that I've set up, then it's all good. You can go on back and continue on as things have been. But if not, I've already said, whoever doesn't bow down is going to be cast into this fiery furnace." And it's interesting, when we noted this morning, you know, you look there in verses 17 and 18, what are they saying? Now, if you go back early, you can see that Nebuchadnezzar says that no one, he says in verse 15, "What God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?" And they respond to him there in verses 16, 17, and 18. They say in verse 17, "If it be so," this is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego speaking, "if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace." What God is there? Our God can. Nebuchadnezzar, nobody can. I'm the greatest. I'm the almighty. No one can deliver you out of my hands. Oh, yes, our God can deliver us out of our hands. If he wants to, he can deliver us. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even, note verse 18, "even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." And that's faith, folks. They knew that God had the power to save them, but they also knew that God may not choose to. And regardless of whether or not he was going to save them, or it didn't matter, they were going to serve the Lord. The willingness to stand there. And they declared their faith. And that's where we closed our lesson this morning. They declared their faith. "We believe in God. We believe that He can stop this from happening. But even if He doesn't, we're still going to serve God. We're not going to bow down before yours." That's some pretty big words, isn't it? But you know, as we see, as we continue reading the story, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had the faith to back it up. And we see where their faith is declared. And now we look at, in verses 19 through 23, we see their faith put to the test. You look there in verse 19. And in verse 19, we see that Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. Nebuchadnezzar was so angry that his face changed. His face was just curled up in the anger. And you probably, if you would have looked in that face when you're angry with your kids or your brothers or whatever growing up, you've probably had that same face. It's not an attractive thing, is it? I don't care how pretty you are. You get angry, and it's not a good thing. And this is the way his face was altered. That's how angry he was. I can't believe anyone has the audacity to come and stand before me and say that their God is mightier than I am. I'm King Nebuchadnezzar. And that's really the arrogance that we see here with King Nebuchadnezzar. And so here, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their clothes are bound around them, and they're cast in. And we noted in our reading, you remember from our reading this morning, what happened to the men that were casting them in? Well, the fire was so hot, it burned them. They were consumed. But they're cast in. And as we see them cast in there, we see Nebuchadnezzar, if you look there, he says in verse 23, it says, "But these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, still tied up. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded and stood up in haste. He said to his high officials, 'Was it not three men we cast bound in the midst of the fire?' They replied to the king, 'Certainly, O king.' He said, 'Look, I see four.'" And so we can see that they had the faith to go ahead and to allow themselves to be cast into this fiery furnace. The heat was so intense, once again, that it killed the men that were throwing these three men, the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, in. And you know, these facts make the miracle all the more obvious. The fact that they were cast into a fire that was so hot that people just got close to it, died. Folks, we need to understand that our faith will also be tested. You know, when you look at people in the world today, they go, "All you got to do is say you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and you'll be saved." And it's not true, folks. Saying you believe is not enough. We've got to have a belief that can back up that faith. We've got to have actions. James talks about faith without works is dead. And so we've got to have the works to back it up. And they said, "We believe that our God can save us." And they delivered. In Jeremiah chapter 20, there in verse 12, Jeremiah writes, "Yet, O Lord of hosts, you who test the righteous, who see the mind and the heart, let me see your vengeance on them, for to you I have set forth my cause." Note there, he tests the righteous. Think about Abraham. He was a righteous fellow, wasn't he? He was a very righteous fellow. What was he tested in? "Well, Abraham, I want you to take your son, your only son, the one that's the promised son, the one that I said is going to come to you in your old age, and from that son, I'm going to raise up a mighty nation. I want you to take him, I want you to bring him up on the mountain, I want you to offer him up as a sacrifice to me." You tell me that's not a test of his faith? Well, he passed, didn't he? He grabbed up Isaac, and he took the men and the fire, and he went on up there, and Isaac's like, "Where's the sacrifice?" And Abraham, the whole time, "The Lord will provide." His faith in God was so great, he knew, we can read in the book of Hebrews, he knew that even if he killed Isaac, God had promised that through Isaac, he would rise up a mighty nation. So he knew that even if he killed him, God would raise him up from the dead. Folks, our faith will be tested. Job, speaking in Job 23 there in verse 10, he says, "But he knows the way that I take. When he has tried me," look at that, "when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold." Now, why do you reckon he's talking about gold there? What happens to gold when you put it in the fire? Besides it melting. The hotter the fire, the more pure the gold becomes. Gold doesn't burn. It'll melt. It'll become a liquid. But the hotter you get it, the more pure that gold becomes. And so Job says, "He's tried me. And when I've passed through the fiery trials that He's given me, I'll come forth better than I was when I went in." And that's the way that we need to be. We need to understand that there will be fiery trials that we will have to face. Oh no, we probably will not be thrown into a fiery pit. We probably won't ever have to face that. We live in a blessed country. And that we have the freedom to come together. And no one's going to say, "You have to bow down to here or you're going to be cast into a fiery pit." That's just not something you're going to find in present day America. I'm not going to say that that couldn't happen in the future or that things could change. But we need to understand that there will be fiery trials. Look with me, if you would, in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning there in verse 12, the Apostle Paul, in writing to this church in Corinth, he says, "Now if any man builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each man's work will become evident. For the day will show it, because it is to be revealed with fire. And the fire itself will test the quality of each man's work." Now you look, let's pay attention. You're building with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, and straw. Now, those two right there, those three right there, they're not going to last in fire, are they? You build something with wood, hay, and straw, and not only will the big bad wolf come and blow it all away, but if you light it on fire, it's all going to burn. And so we need to make sure that we're building in the way that we should be building, that we're using this gold, silver, precious stones, things that will last. But the fire itself will test the quality of each man's work. If any man's work which he has built on it remains, he will receive a reward. If any man's work is burned up, he will suffer loss. But he himself will be saved, yet so is through fire. Our works, we read about where they're going to follow us. And our good works need to be that which will last through the test. The things that will go through the fiery furnace and come out more pure on the other side. James writes in James chapter 1, there beginning in verse 2, James says, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance." You want to know why Blake can run longer than I can? He runs, period. That's why he can run longer than I can. He's put himself to the test. He's built up an endurance where he can run longer, run further, probably run a lot faster too. But that's what we need to, when difficulties arise, what's that old saying? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? That's what he's talking about here. When we endure various trials, he says, "Count it a joy, my brethren, because if you make it through those, you're going to be stronger than you were." But we like to complain about the trials and difficulties that we're going through, don't we? Instead of looking at them as a way for God to kind of burn us a little bit and make us come out a little bit more pure on the other side. Peter writes of this in 1 Peter chapter 1. There, beginning in verse 6, he says, "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, which being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." Note there, the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, is tested by fire. And in this, that's what we rejoice. That we're distressed by these various trials, but we come through on the other side better than when we went in. I mean, this congregation here can look at how they were, say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And you went through a great difficulty, and you came out a little bit stronger, didn't you? You came out a little bit closer. The main thing is don't let it stop. Don't go, "Well, I'm stronger than I was." No, there's still going to be trials. There's still going to be difficulties, and we need to continue to be willing to face those. Going further in 1 Peter chapter 4 there, looking there in verses 12 and 13, Peter says, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for what? For your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of His glory you may rejoice with exultation." You know, anytime you think that you've got it a little too hard, you just go back and read the Gospels. Anytime you think you got a little too hard, you read what the brother read up here before the Lord's Supper this morning. Anytime you think, "Well, I just can't go on anymore. I can't face any more persecutions," you read about Jesus. And you think about it, what all He went through. You see, in everything that we face, we're sharing in the sufferings of Christ. It's a small share. But He went through so much more that we can have forgiveness of our sins. How would we stand if we had the same test as these three men? What if George W. Bush, or whoever our next president might would be, were to go into Washington, D.C. there at Washington Monument and say, we're gonna change this Washington Monument. Instead of it being a monument to Washington, we're gonna change it. We're gonna put an individual up here, and it's gonna be an image that, and we require every American to come and bow down once a year. Would we be there? And if you don't come and bow down, you're no longer an American. You have to go and live. I'm trying to think of the worst place in the world. The Sahara Desert. You can't live anywhere else. You have to go and live in the Sahara Desert. That's pretty hot. Except at night, then it's really, really cold. I mean, we're talking the kind of cold I don't like. And you're going from extreme heat to extreme cold, just from day to night. Would we be willing to face the trials that were set before Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Would we refuse to bow? You see, we need to understand, no matter what our faith might be tested in, we need to be able to stand faithful before the Lord and even before the world and tell them who we are serving, that we're not going to bow down to anything in this world. And we see in the latter part of the chapter where their faith is victorious. As I read earlier, we can see here the great miracle of their faith in that, you know, here Nebuchadnezzar, he says, didn't we just throw three fellows in there? I'm like, yeah, we just threw three guys in. Well, how come I see four? And one is like the son of man or a son of man, son of the gods. So we can see their victorious faith. The miracle here is really one of the greatest miracles in the scriptures. Once again, they're cast into a fiery furnace that is so hot that those that are throwing them in are burned alive. And yet they're down there just walking around in the fire. And there's a fourth person with him. The appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods. Later, Nebuchadnezzar calls this one his gods, that is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's gods, angels. Nebuchadnezzar commands that they come up out of the fire. And as the witnesses gather around them, they look at their clothes, and their clothes aren't burnt. Their hair's not burnt. They even... not even the smell of smoke on them. And that's an amazing thing. All you got to do is walk through the front door of Walmart and you come out smelling like smoke sometimes, can't you? You just walk by someone smoking, you're going to reek of smoke. And here they've been in the fiery furnace and there's not even the smell of fire on them. That's an amazing thing. To the point to where he said, Nebuchadnezzar said, there's no other God who's able to deliver in this way. Now you think this is the same man who said back in verse 15, what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? Well, he found out what God, right? He said, and Nebuchadnezzar was one who believed in many gods. And he knew that this God was greater than any God he had ever thought up. He knew that this God was one to be respected and feared. Folks, we need to understand that God will likewise reward those who make their stand for Him today. In Hebrews chapter 13, there in verse 5, we read, make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could understand that, couldn't they? They faced the fiery pit, but they weren't alone, were they? There was someone there walking along with them. You remember in the psalmist there, he says, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they do comfort me. No matter where I am, no matter how dark it may be, God's there with us. No matter how alone I may feel, everybody at work may be saying, well, you're just an idiot. All your classmates may be laughing at you, but if you're serving the Lord, God is with you. God will stay with you. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, there in verse 13, the Apostle Paul tells us there in verse 13, he says, no temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also so that you will be able to endure it. Now let's take just a moment to look at that. I got it hard. I face temptations that no other man has ever faced. No, you don't. I don't care what it is you face. I don't care what it is that tempts you and how strong it may be. Someone else has faced it. Someone else has overcome. God, you're just putting too much on my plate. I can't handle it. Well, God thinks you're a lot stronger than you think you are because He's not going to put anything before you that you're not strong enough to deal with. I don't care what it is. And that last part there, He says, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also. You see, there's our responsibility there. The temptation is there. The devil's going to put the temptation before us. God's going to make sure it's limited. It's not so much that we can't say, no, I'm not going to do it. God's going to make sure of that. But also, He's going to provide a way out. Young people, that way out may be grabbing the phone and calling Mama and Daddy and saying, Mama, I need you to come get me. I'm scared. There's things going on here that I know I shouldn't be doing. I want to come home. Perhaps that way out is telling your boss, no, I will not do that. That's wrong. Even if the world doesn't see it as wrong, I cannot do that before my God in heaven. You remember Joseph? There he was with the woman, Potiphar's wife, and she's saying, lie with me, lie with me. He said, I'm in charge of everything. He's held back nothing but you. And even if it was okay with men, how can I do this great sin before God? There's always a way out. There's a way of escape, but it takes us looking for it. It's not some hidden trap door either, folks. It's a big glaring sign that says, exit, exit, come on. You don't need to be here. Come on and get out of here. But a lot of times we like to block that out. We allow ourselves to be burdened more than we should be. It's interesting that the original word for temptation means a trial of any kind. And thus it includes trials other than those which are temptations to sin. It might be something that in and of itself is not wrong. But we know that as a child of God, it's not something we should be doing. We know that it's not going to set the best example. We know that it might cause others to stumble. Brother Earl's tired of me using Brooklyn in my sermon, so I'm going to use my Uncle Jeb. He's old enough that he should know better. My Uncle Jeb is a world-class clogger. I may have told you all about him before. He's won several clogging contests in North Alabama. Now, if you don't know what clogging is, you just turn on hee-haw or something like that and square dancing, things of that nature. That's what he does. And he sees nothing whatsoever wrong with clogging. But I can tell you personally of several who have said, well, James Black dances, why can't I? They don't see the difference. He says, well, it's not dancing like what... Well, I'm sorry, but when they go clogging, the women's skirts, they may come out to here, but they're up to there. And they're flashing their panties. They may be big ruffled panties, but they're flashing them nonetheless. He's telling me that a child of God needs to be doing things like that. While he might believe that what he is doing is not necessarily wrong, the influence he's having on others, and this is something I've talked to him, his brothers have talked to him, my father has talked to him about. But he refuses. And he's led many down the wrong path because of his refusal. That even though it may not be sinful, he refuses to put away these things. Remember the Apostle Paul, when he's talking about the eating of meat? He said, if any of my brethren will stumble through my eating of meat, what's he not going to do ever again? It's a statement in the Bible I like to read the least because I love meat. As much as Nathan loves grape juice, I love meat. But he says, if it causes anyone to stumble, I'll never eat meat again. And folks, we've got to be willing to make the same statement and back it up. Whatever it might be, we need to have the courage to stand faithful to the Lord. As we read again in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13, be on the alert. Stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. We've got to be willing to stand before the world. The story is told, and I don't know how true it is. When you get things on the internet, you automatically, if you don't, you should, automatically judge it as probably not true. But it's an interesting story nonetheless, and I hope that you'll bear with me with this. And if it is not true, then it is a perfect example of how we should be willing to stand up. And we have several that are in college or that have faced college or will be going to college. And it's told that just a few years ago at the University of Southern California, there was a professor of philosophy that was a deeply committed atheist. His primary goal for one required class was to spend the entire semester attempting to prove that God could not exist. His students were always afraid to argue with him because of his impeccable logic. For 20 years he had taught this class and no one had ever had the courage to stand up to him. Sure, some had argued in class at times, but no one had ever really stood up to him. Nobody would go against him because he had such a reputation. At the end of every semester, on the last day, he would say to his class of students, of 300 students, if there's anyone here who still believes in God, stand up. In 20 years, no one had ever stood up. They knew what he was going to do next. He would say, because anyone who does believe in God is a fool. If God existed, he could stop this piece of chalk from hitting the ground and breaking. Such a simple task to prove that he is God, and yet he can't do it. And every year he would drop the chalk onto the tile floor of the classroom, and it would shatter into 100 pieces. All of the students could do nothing but stop and stare. Most of the students were convinced that God couldn't exist. Certainly a number of Christians had slipped through, but for 20 years they had been too afraid to stand up. Well, a few years ago, there was a freshman that happened to get enrolled in the class. He was a Christian and had heard the stories about this professor. He had to take the class because it was one of the required classes for his major, and he was afraid. But for 3 months that semester, he prayed every morning that he would have the courage to stand up no matter what the professor said or what the class thought. Nothing they said or did could ever shatter his faith, he hoped. Finally, the day came. The professor said, "If there is anyone here who still believes in God, stand up." The professor and the class of 300 people looked at him, shocked, as he stood up at the back of the classroom. The professor shouted, "You fool, if God existed, he could keep this piece of chalk from breaking when it hit the ground." He proceeded to drop the chalk, but as he did, it slipped out of his fingers, off his shirt cuff, onto the pleat of his pants, down his leg, and off his shoe. And as it hit the ground, it rolled away, all in one piece, unbroken. The professor's jaw dropped as he stared at the chalk. He looked up at the young man and then walked out of the lecture hall. And the young man who had stood up proceeded to walk to the front of the room. And for the next half hour, 300 students stayed and listened as he presented evidences for the existence of God and his son, Jesus Christ. Whether it's true or not, that's a modern day Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And whether it's true or not, it is a perfect example of the things that our young people face in the school systems and the strength that we need to be instilling in them right now, that they will have the faith and the courage like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like Daniel, like Jeremiah, like Jonah, that they will have the courage to stand up and be counted as a child of God. But perhaps you're here this evening and you've never obeyed the gospel. If you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, if you believe that He is the Son of God and that He died for your sins, and you never obeyed His gospel, then you don't know, you don't have anything to protect you. The Lord is not with you when you face the fiery trials of this world. But all it takes is coming forward and confessing your belief that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, repenting of your sins, being buried in baptism as is required of us. Jesus said, "Believe and be baptized." He who believes and is baptized will be saved. He who does not believe will be condemned. Do these things and you'll have God there with you. He'll stand there with you. And if you pray to God for strength, He'll give it to you. Enough to stand up before 300, 3,000, 3 million, it does not matter. You can dare to stand like Joshua. You can dare to stand like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And no one in this world can stand against you. For if God be with us, who can stand against us? If you have not obeyed the gospel, tonight is your opportunity, and there is no other. Tonight is the night of salvation. Perhaps you're here and you've obeyed the gospel, but you've not remained faithful. Perhaps you've not been willing to stand up and be counted as a child of God. Perhaps you're one who stood in the background or bowed a little bit before the idols of this world, not wanting to be counted weird or different. If such, if you're ashamed of the Lord is ashamed of you. If you're ashamed to stand up for Jesus, then He will not stand up for you on the day of judgment. Whatever your situation might be, today is the day to make it right. Right now, as we stand and as we sing.